This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by BetterHelp. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, whose pronouns are she and her, who is a black girl trying to play footsie with Sam.
Okay, this is the third episode in a row where my feet have been bought up now.
Your feet fine. I've known Samantha for like almost my whole life, and literally you don't be seeing her feet. Like, I was like, Samantha, your feet kind of small, but they cute though.
Feet fine as fuck, girl. Thank you.
Let me get them bajits. I have some bajits.
No, ooh. Not that again.
That took me out. It still takes me out. Ooh, we a mess.
Get in my bone marrow. On this here ridiculous show, we have two types of episodes. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host of this here show, and one of my rotating co-hosts, talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, all the hosts come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is an interview episode, one part of Maternal May, once again coordinated by the lovely Akua.
Thank you.
What are you, like 5 for 5 now? It's amazing. This is some of the best podcast episodes I ever listened to.
Thank you.
It's because you're producing them.
I'll be trying.
Yeah, you're succeeding.
So this episode is going to be about pregnancy loss. It is going to be about traumatic birth experiences.
Yes.
So if you are uncomfortable with those topics, we'll see you maybe next time.
Yeah, you can listen to maybe the next 5 minutes and then... stop.
Catch our segments and then just shut it off there.
Yeah. And then listen to the next episode.
I don't think that ain't gonna be a good one.
Oh no.
That's gonna have some difficult topics as well.
Go back and listen to some older episodes. Listen to porn from season one. That was a ridiculous episode.
And I say that because for Maternal May, you know, we're diving into parts of maternity, that's a gendered word I don't want to use.
Parts of being pregnant.
Yeah, of being pregnant, family planning, reproduction, and reproductive justice that are neglected. And those tend to be heavy. Those tend, you know, to be traumatic. Those tend to be the experiences of marginalized people.
And, right.
You know, it's going to be some stuff, you know. So if this is content that is difficult for you, we got 100 and some odd other episodes you can re-listen, and we'll catch you in June.
Yeah, or listen to somebody else's podcast.
Yeah.
There's many other great podcasts out there.
We'll plug our Bad Bitch Brigade and all their episodes.
All my babes of the week are podcasters this episode, so there
Everyone
we go.
Everyone, as Samantha says in the next segment. Yeah. Yes. This episode, we're talking with Morgan Goodwin about her journey through pregnancy loss. Her experience with cervical insufficiency, aka incompetent cervix, healing, black marriage, resilience, and blogging.
Yes. It's very good. And then also, as with any of our heavier episodes, we also have guests who are just like not light about it, but taking it in stride. So it's not like, I wouldn't say it's a downer by any means.
No. Yeah. It seems like she is in a comfortable place to talk about it.
Yes. taking it in stride. That's why you're a therapist and I am Sam.
No, it's hard because it's hard to find the adjectives, but it does seem like she's in a more comfortable place to talk about it. It does seem that she wants to share her story to help other people, especially because pregnancy loss is something that's not talked about.
Exactly.
You know, it's not given enough light on, even though it happens so frequently.
Yes.
Frequently, you know.
Which is another thing we talk about during the interview.
Yes.
Yeah. So before we get into that, we are going to do a couple of short segments, and they are...
Bay of the Week.
We talk about people who we find attractive.
Ho of the Week.
We shout out you guys, the homies, the listeners, and the fans.
And self-care tip of the week.
Where we give you all some advice on how to take care of yourselves. And a part of that, I'm doing a mini-series called Sam's Spring Summer Date Ideas.
Yes. spring and summer. Yes. If you guys would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag NAHO Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
Dab. And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, Black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, like foot fetishes, for example, we would love to do so. So please, to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. We're going to take a quick break and tell you about our sponsor this week. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? It might be a pregnancy loss or a job loss or a bout of depression or coping with grief. I know after my mom passed away in 2016, I fell into a pretty long bout of grief where I just felt like laying in bed all day and not doing much of anything. I had just lost my best friend and my mom in one person. I had no job, I had no money, and the 2016 election just happened. The shit was bleak and I was like internally freaking out. And one thing I really could have used at the time was a space to talk to a professional about some of the distress that I was going through internally. If you ever find yourself wanting to talk to someone to help sort through your stuff, I want to put you on to BetterHelp. So BetterHelp is an online portal that provides direct-to-consumer access to behavioral health services, offering online counseling and therapy services. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. So I'm not in the dark space that I was a few years ago, but I definitely have some issues, as we all do, that I want to sort out with someone. So I signed up for BetterHelp a few hours ago, and the process is super easy. You can customize important things like the sexuality, gender, and race of your counselor. And I'm currently waiting to be matched, and I'll give you all an update on how that goes in coming episodes. So BetterHelp is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counseling network, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. So here's how it works once you get matched. You can log into your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great and therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Visit BetterHelp.com/IHU and join over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. NAHO Uprising listeners, that's y'all, get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/IHU, as in NAHO Uprising, IHU. Now let's get back to the show.
And up first,
Bay of the Week. So I had a couple of bays this week, and they're all podcasters who I greatly enjoy, and I just wanted to shout them out. So my first are Rod and Karen of the Black Eye Who Tips podcast. Yes. And I feel like I've said a bunch of times that I love that show, but I love that show. But I wanted to give them a specific shout out this week because, you know, one of my favorite shows, Games of Thrones. Wow,
they,
I did it.
You got it. They got you.
I'm officially Black. Game of Thrones, affectionately known as Games of Thrones, is wrapping up. And I like to listen to review series for shows that I'm watching just to like just live it again in your head and like talk about it, but like without actually talking, which is what a podcast is. And they have, in my opinion, probably like the funnest and best Game of Thrones review podcast. They do it every Wednesday, and I enjoy it, one, because they're Black, two, because they're fucking hilarious, but three, like, it's a bit of a different season this season. It's shorter than most seasons. It's 6 episodes, so people feel like things are being rushed and like things are not like like, you know, you expect something to end the way that you want it to end, and it's not doing that, and you're just like, this show sucks. And a lot of other review podcasts are like, what the fuck are they doing in the writing? And I'm just like, you don't write shit. Shut the fuck up. I am not trying to hear you say that.
What do you know about the struggle?
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't really want to hear that. I just want to hear people like make fun of stuff and like unpack it and have fun. And they're really fun. And every guest that they bring on is really fun. And they were also featured on Vice News recently for like talking about the show. So they participate in a hashtag on Twitter that's in like Black Twitter that was invented by another podcast called Five Starter Podcast called Dem Thrones. And basically it's like there's like with everything, Black people just like find community, especially in online spaces. And they were featured on Vice because of like they're like pillars in the Game of Thrones community. And I thought that was super cool. So shout out to them. That is the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. My second podcaster bae of the week this week is Juju Bae from A Little Juju podcast. So this podcast is kind of like about like conjuring and like African traditional religion and mysticism and stuff like that. Exactly. Things that I've always been really curious about, but I've never heard a podcast about. And Juju has a podcast about it, and she is a practitioner, and she's really, really insightful. And then she's also funny, and then also she's actually like mad gorgeous.
Yeah, I'd be on Instagram like watching her hula hoop to Meg. Yo,
really
I was like, give me a hula hoop.
That was really sexy.
Yo, every night, I'm just
she,
I'm waiting.
She was at Trinidad Carnival in February, and I was just like, yes, I live and I stand. Oh my god. Yeah, so shout out to Juju. Definitely take a listen to that podcast. And then shout out to our sister in Black Sexuality podcast, Evian Whitney of the Sexually Liberated Woman. Her guests are super fucking insightful. And I also like, I really appreciate the fact that like her show is also about sexuality, and it's also hosted by like a Black queer person. And it's like, we have two different shows, mm-hmm. but they're also both good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Evian's podcast just came back from a little hiatus. And like the first episode was with this woman who wrote a
Christine Solis.
Yeah. She wrote a cool podcast about like witches and sex. And she has a new podcast called Cat Call, Reclaiming the Feral Feminine. And they spent like the whole podcast episode talking about like, isn't it so weird how like the pussy is called the pussy, and you're like older women are called cougars, mm-hmm. and like you're always emitting cat energy, and like we dress up as sexy cats. Mm-hmm. Like there's a
train of cat.
Exactly.
Catology. I'm making words up.
Catology. But yes.
Yes,
the catology of sexuality. But yeah, it was just like a super fun podcast. And she always has really, really good questions for her guests and really, really insightful guests. And also she's like sweet and nice and also quite beautiful.
Yes.
So that's another podcast that you can listen to if this episode is too dark for you. But then also in general, take a listen to all their podcasts because they're all super great. I will link each to the description in this episode. Now on to Hove of the Week. We want to give a special shout out to Bella Rojas, a.k.a. at Lily Bella May, who wrote on Twitter, I started listening to this awesome podcast on sexuality at Inner Ho Uprising. You have been my go-to podcast for the past few weeks. I am on episode 144 at the moment. I can't wait to catch up to the real-time episodes. Shout me out in an episode so I know when this all happened. So this is your shout out.
Hey.
And we're letting you know that this all happened. and our next hoe of the week is
Lily C.
Yes.
Lily paid a hoe.
Mm-hmm.
Lily committed to a hoe. On Patreon.
Lily put a ring on all four of our fingers.
Yes.
Sibling spouses.
Yes, sibling spouses.
Yes. Okay. We have no self-care tips of the week because mm-hmm. Akua is hanging on by a thread, and her self-care tip of the week was to hold on tight to that thread. Mm-hmm. And
oh,
if not,
break?
Yes, if not, take a nap. Either way, do your thing. And my spring / summer date idea this week is to go on a star walk. Because last week it was to go to a communal science laboratory, and I realized that that is not feasible for anybody who listens mm-hmm. to this podcast, not even me.
Not I.
Rob was like, I'm going to save some tips. I'm like, okay. We'll see.
Capitalism.
Yes, exactly. But you know what's free? Going on a star walk. So a star walk is just going outside and looking at the fucking stars.
Yes.
But you can make a game of it, and like you can make it really cute. So there are certain apps like augmented reality apps where you open up the app and you point your phone at the sky and it shows you that Orion
mm-hmm.
is right there. What are some other
things? The Big Dipper.
The Big Dipper
the
is
Little
right
Dipper.
There you go.
The North Star.
Capricorn. Sometimes Mercury just be out. Sometimes Mars is just like roaming around.
Even
you could
Venus.
See Venus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you can even see Jupiter sometimes. You could see all these niggas.
I'm about to say, y'all got eyes. I can barely see in front of me, but okay.
Yeah, and you can make a cute game of it and like point it out and stuff like that. I recommend you do this with a bay that you're a bit more familiar with, just because you kind of have to be like not in a city setting to do this, because obviously you can't see stars with city lights. So you need to be like a bit out of the way. So do this with a bay that you're comfortable with. You know, sometimes niggas are just like, come to my house and smoke weed. And you're like, I don't know you and I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But you can smoke weed together and go on a star walk.
Nigga, nah, that sounds like y'all about to be out losing y'all mind.
Well, that's why I don't smoke weed. But if you do, you know, do that. You can be a little tips while you're doing it.
The weather's nice to do it.
Exactly. Yes. So if you go on a star walk after listening to this, let me know how it goes, because no one ever takes me. No one but my friends ever take me out.
Let's go take Samantha. I'll date you. You know I will.
This is true. And I will date you back. And then a racist will yell at us. Because that's what
happens. And that's what happens when we go out together.
Who knows? Last but not least, let's plug some events. So a podcast that I co-produce called Not Yet the Podcast, which is a podcast about growing up and the fact that we're never really finished growing up, because I'm still a child. I don't know about you guys, but I am definitely a 26-year-old child. I'm a big ass child with titties and ass.
No, that sounds about right. That's me since the age of 10, so I'm still a child.
Titties, ass, and knee problems. And a weird pain in my back recently.
Don't forget the hip.
So this podcast is about exploring relationships and how the relationships that we have with other people help us to grow, hinder our growth, sometimes form codependent growths, things like that. It's a very interesting podcast. It's super digestible. Every episode is like only 20 minutes long. And then also, like, I made it, so
it's good. You know it's good.
Yeah. I co-produce this podcast with a wonderful multimedia producer and creative and artist named Paige Polk. And the link to the where you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts will also be in the description of this episode, so you can subscribe for when it launches later this May. And then every month we do a very, very cool, fun thing called Sex Trivia. It's a trivia night at a bar called Love Story. It's on the border of Bushwick and Queens. So if you're in New York, you should definitely come through to that. It's free 99. We have sex experts. We have prizes. We have good music. We have funny questions. There's drinks. There's drink specials. There's food in the area.
Yeah.
You can eat. Yeah, it's just good. It's a
last,
good time.
The last drink special was cum shots.
Oh,
them
yes.
Them shits was delicious.
Yeah, they were quite tasty.
I was popping them shits back.
Not made of actual cum this time.
That is June
2nd at 5 p.m. The link to register to compete will be in the description of this episode. And if you want to just show up, just show up. A94 Wyckoff. Pay a hoe. If you love, love, love this show and appreciate the hard work that we do to bring it to you every week, we would so greatly appreciate it if you supported us monetarily and non-monetarily. To support us monetarily, we ask you to visit innerhouseuprising.com and choose the Pay a Hoe Once or Pay a Hoe Monthly options. Pay a Hoe Once redirects you to our PayPal, where you can drop off any one-time donation at any amount that you want as many times as you want. So that takes you to paypal.me/innerhoe. It's kind of like we're fuck buddies and we just call each other up when we want to satisfy that itch. If you choose the Pay a Hoe Monthly option, you'll be redirected to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. On Patreon, you'll be given the option of setting a monthly recurring donation at any price that you want. And we'll return the favor with some monthly goodies, like we're in a committed relationship and we have some expectations for one another. So if you donate $2 or more a month, you get early and discounted access to Inner Ho Uprising events. And if you donate $5 or more a month, you get, fuck that, a regular Inner Ho Uprising newsletter curated by yours truly. It's fun, it's insightful, it's filled with offbeat stories about sex, love, and dating that you may have missed in the current drudgery of the news cycle. If you're strapped for cash or don't wish to support us monetarily, then there are other ways to help us out. You can leave an Apple Podcast review or a Stitcher review. You can comment on one of our episodes on SoundCloud or CastBox or Himalaya. You can tweet about us and tag us on Twitter or Instagram. You can reply to Twitter threads asking what your favorite podcasts are with our @. You can drop a link to your favorite Inner Ho Uprising episode in your group chat. You can tell your work best friend to give us a listen. Or you can walk down the street rocking some Inner Ho Uprising merchandise, which you can find on innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. Now, let's get into this motherfucking show. Stolen heart, but they took So this is our segment, Fuck It, and it's our topic of the day, and we're talking about pregnancy loss.
Mm-hmm. Cervical insufficiency, blogging.
Yes.
Black love.
Yes.
All of it. Mm-hmm. And today we have Morgan, pronouns she, her. Morgan is a 25-year-old pro hurdler, actress, wife, and blogger. She has a bachelor's in public relations and a master's degree in strategic communication. She's currently based in Dallas and travels to and from San Jose, where her husband plays as a wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers. Morgan is here to share her story of pregnancy loss, cervical insufficiency, aka incompetent cervix, resilience, and advocacy. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Morgan.
Welcome, Morgan.
Well, thanks for the invite.
Of course.
As we spoke before, this is our maternal May series where we'll be having people come in to talk about all aspects of pregnancy and reproductive agency. And we wanted you to come and share your story. Definitely because pregnancy loss is not something that is usually fitted into the realm of maternity. It's very neglected in speaking about mothers. And we felt like it was a necessary component. If we were going to do this series, we had to include all outcomes of pregnancy. So we're very excited that you decided to come and share your story with us. We want you to tell your story and, of course, and your journey through pregnancy loss. And we'll just jump in with relevant questions to kind of expound details for our listeners. Tell us when your journey started.
Okay, so my journey started in 2016. Me and my husband, we both tried out for the Olympic trials, for the 2016 Olympic trials. After that, I said, okay, now we can start trying because we got married in February of 2016. So I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to start trying. You know, I graduated college and I'm ready, you know, ready for the next step. We're married. We got us a house. Let's start trying to conceive.
Well, can I interject in there, Morgan? Because in the blog that you wrote for Mommy Nation, you had actually talked about a brief pregnancy loss you had experienced prior to 2016, prior to actively conceiving.
Yes. So that was when I was in college. We had a slip up and I ended up getting pregnant in college. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do or whatever. But we got to the doctor's office. I was supposed to be around 9 weeks then. I was measuring only around 8 weeks and the baby didn't have a heartbeat. So then I ended up miscarrying, and that ended up being July 25th, one day before my birthday, which is July 26th. So that was really, you know, a devastating loss. That was our first loss. But it, in my eyes and in my husband's eyes, it kind of was like a blessing in disguise because we weren't ready. We weren't mm-hmm. married. We were just dating. We were in college. I'm on scholarship running track. I still had 2 more years to go, and I didn't want to risk my scholarship or anything like that. So that was the first, that was our first loss, which then, you know, in my head, I'm not thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm gonna have problems in the long run. Like, no, we're good. You know, let's just wait until we're ready. So then now fast forwarding back to when we actually did start trying in 2016, it took us a while. So we were in the season when my husband was in football season. And that ends usually in December if they don't make it to the playoffs, which we didn't make it to the playoffs. So our season was done. January, we went home. I went to go see a reproductive specialist because I wasn't getting pregnant. And I'm like, okay, something is wrong. What's going on? Turns out I had, they did a sonohistogram, which they basically, saline sonohistogram, which they basically put water up your uterus and blow it up like a balloon just to see if there's anything, any blockage. And I basically had a polyp in there, which is basically a growth of just extra tissue. Like, that's just not supposed to be there. So they removed it. And at the same time, I had a laparoscopy, which at that point we found out that I had endometriosis, which is a hormonal imbalance to where, you know, after you have a period, your lining thickens up. During that process, the lining that thickens up grows in other areas. So it grows outside of the uterine wall and around the cervix, maybe around the ovaries or whatever. But my doctor removed it. Mine wasn't severe or anything, but it was causing me issues where my uterus was attached to my bowel. So every time I would be on my cycle and I would have a bowel movement, I would be in excruciating pain. You know, I'm glad I had the laparoscopy and the hysteroscopy at the same time to remove the polyp, but also see if there was anything else that was inside that was going to cause a delay in me getting pregnant. After I got cleaned out and everything is looking good, we did IUIs, which is intrauterine insemination, where they basically just take the sperm, wash it, and then put all of the best ones in there up your cervix, you know, into your uterus, so it had the best chance of finding the developed egg. And then everything was on our second try. We got it. We got pregnant, and I mean, it was a scary ride because I had a miscarriage, you know, around 8 to 9 weeks the first time. So I'm scared of the first trimester.
How long, after all of these procedures and you guys were trying, that you conceived?
It literally took basically a full year. Cause it takes some time when you're going through a fertility specialist. Each month they want to track your follicles, and all of these tests, they take some time. So I say it took maybe about 3 months. And then 1 month we were trying and it didn't happen. Another month we tried with the IUI. It didn't happen. The second month we tried with the IUI, it happened then.
Okay.
Were all of the testing and the specialists that you go through, is that something that your insurance covered, or is that something that you had to cover out of pocket?
Definitely something that my insurance covered.
Okay, that's good.
You know, my husband is in NFL and they use Cigna. And Cigna, the insurance that they have is a really good insurance, basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
So the second time you guys conceive and you're kind of rattled about the first trimester, given your past, your history.
Right. So we get through the first trimester. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. Okay, now we can announce our pregnancy. We announced our pregnancy on Instagram with a photo with both of us holding the ultrasound picture.
When you had first miscarried back in college, did you ever tell family or friends about that? Or y'all was just like, all right, let's skate over this?
Yeah, no, my mom was the only person who knew. My mom and my sister. Like, we didn't tell anybody. Nobody knew. Because it really wasn't nobody's business. Like, because I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. So now you guys have made it past the first trimester. You announced on Instagram.
Everything is smooth. I had a smooth pregnancy. None of my pregnancies I got sick or morning sickness or anything like that. Like, smooth. I mean, I was tired, but got through that part. I got a lot more energy, moving around really good, traveling, doing this, doing that. And then we end up coming to our anatomy scan, where they basically check the baby's heart, the baby's brain, the baby's limbs, fingers, toes, where they check everything on the baby. So they normally do this scan around 18 through 21 weeks. It just depends on when they can squeeze you in. I happen to be 19 weeks exactly when I went in to get checked. And that's when they do the scan. Everything was looking great. Baby's healthy. Then they get the last part of the exam is they check your cervix. And they checked my cervix, and the doctor, well, the ultrasound tech said, okay, hold on. I'm going to have to just give me 1 second. And she walks out and brings another doctor in, which is one of the main doctors. And so that they can also do a check too, just to be, you know, double check.
Mm-hmm.
And my cervix, I only had 0.5 of a centimeter of cervix left. So that's literally nothing, like literally nothing. Just think about, have you ever blow up a balloon and the balloon has that little, It's a circular at the top, but it has another little smaller circle at the bottom when you blow it up too much. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how basically my cervix was looking. And I literally had a little bit left because I was funneling.
When you say funneling, you mean that your baby was pushing out from the inside?
It's not necessarily the baby. It's the sac.
Okay.
My sac is dipping. You're basically dilating from the inside. Like, your cervix is opening from the inside. And your cervix is what keeps the pregnancy in there. So it keeps the pregnancy safe and closed. Mm-hmm. And that's where your mucus plug is. So just think about, I hadn't lost my mucus plug, but I only have a little bit of cervix left.
And when you were like learning this from the doctors, what was going through your mind as well as your husband's mind? Because this, I'm sure, was like out of your realm of understanding. So was it like scary hearing this from the doctor?
Actually, no.
Oh, this wasn't out of your realm of understanding.
No, it was definitely scary. Uh-huh. I know a lot about, you know, the terms and things just because, I mean, even before, I kind of knew a little bit about preterm labor and things like that, but not thinking that anything was going to happen to me. I know about the uterus. I know a lot about, you know, the female organs just because being under fertility treatments and just learning about myself going through the process of cleaning my uterus out, I learned a lot about the uterus. Mm-hmm. So the terms weren't out of my head. I've actually got compliments from doctors when I'm, you know, spitting out these terms. They're like, are you in a medical field? I'm like, oh no. Just slinging these terms like you just know. Like, I'm like, well, you know, I kind of do my research, you know. But yeah, so at my 19 week scan, I went in 19 weeks 0 days. That's when they saw my cervix and they were just telling me, look, you only have 0.5 centimeter of a cervix left. You're supposed to have 3 centimeters. And, they were basically saying, what we can do is you have a couple of options. One, you can go back home, be on bed rest and wait it out and see what happens and take progesterone pills, which is basically, progesterone just helps your lining of your uterus, and it helps keep your cervix, it thickens the cervix, I guess, or makes it stronger. But that was one option that I had. The other option was I can get admitted to the hospital and get a emergency cerclage, or rescue cerclage is what they call it, where it's basically a stitch. They stitch your cervix closed. And I was like, I said, I need some time to think. I don't know, you know. They gave me some time to think. I called my mom. I called my sister. My sister said, get the cerclage. I got a couple of friends that had to get that. And they were sisters. Her friends were sisters that had to get it. Both of them had to get it with their pregnancies because they had previously lost one, not knowing that they had incompetent cervix. So, and then I talked to my mom, and my mom said, I had to get that with you and your sister. You need to get it. Get the cerclage. The cerclage will work.
Was this your first time hearing this from your mom?
Yes. I didn't know that she had to have a stitch. Like, nobody's thinking that this thing is hereditary, you know? So she didn't know. She lost one before my sister. Then that time, the next time, they were like, okay, we're going to put you a cerclage in for the next time.
Had you even known that your mom had a lost pregnancy?
Yes, but not at 5 months, you know? Like, not at 5 months. Like, she said she had miscarriages and stuff. But I'm not thinking, oh, well, she miscarried a full baby at 5 months. Right. Like, no, I didn't know that until that moment. And so then I decided, okay, I said, okay, I'm going to get the cerclage. Me and my husband did a lot of praying, and we said, okay, we're going to do it. They told me before I get the cerclage, they would have to do an amniocentesis, which is basically a long needle that they stick in your belly and pull some of the fluid, the amniotic fluid out, and test it for infection. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes incompetent cervix, your cervix starts to open up prematurely, which let infection in. The infection kills the fetus and it pushes the fetus out. So it makes you go into labor. I didn't have infection because my cervix was still closed. I hadn't lost my mucus plug. And they were just checking just to make sure, because the last thing they would want to do is to lock in infection in your uterus, which could cause problems. So I did that, got the amniocentesis, and it hurt really, really bad. Then I admitted myself to the hospital. They gave me a spinal, and I got the, they were able to push my sac back up and sew my cervix. I stayed in the hospital that evening. They just monitored me, and then I ended up going home that same night.
Is the rescue cerclage the only treatment for incompetent cervix?
No, it's not. So emergency cerclage is when you find out later, and most of the time it's too late. Like in my case, it was too late. For me, my case is really severe. My cervix is trash, basically. So I ended up dilating very early, 19 weeks, as opposed to somebody catching this at 23 weeks, where you got a 1 week before you could just hold out for them to actually step in and try to, you know, save your baby. Another treatment is transabdominal cerclage, which you can get, which is very invasive, and a lot of doctors don't recommend you to get it unless you actually talk to a doctor who places them, who understands the procedure and why you need the procedure. And then you have a preventative cerclage, which is just like the rescue cerclage, but it's done earlier in the pregnancy, around 13 weeks before they see any signs of shortening.
It sounds like from what the hints you've given us earlier that incompetent cervix is hereditary.
You know what? I don't think it has been too many studies, but the doctor who I went to that placed my transabdominal cerclage, Dr. Haney out of Chicago, which he places tons of these things every year. He places about 200 every year, and women all over the world come to him to get it done, who have incompetent cervix. And he's, you know, had so many patients that he's kind of coming up with different, you know, ideas of what it can be. And he does think that it's hereditary. And he strongly suggests that when I have my kids and have girls, that I let them know, you know, to watch out for this when you get pregnant. And we're going to stay on you when you get pregnant so that we make sure that she doesn't go through the same thing. Because I think it's hereditary. It also happens to women who've probably gone through a previous birth and then they go full term that time. But during the birth, something happens to where the cervix weakens. And then now they have incompetent cervix for their next pregnancies. Or it's other people who have had surgeries, like LEAP procedure, who they basically chip away some of their cervix off because some of the cells are abnormal. So when you get your annual pap smears, you have abnormal cells. They'll chop some of the cervix off to test it. And sometimes they'll have to keep chopping it off if you keep getting those abnormal cells so you don't end up with cervical cancer. So many times they end up with incompetent cervix too, because now you're chopping away your cervix. And guess what? Your cervix is now shorter than the average cervix that's supposed to be about 3 to 4 inches long. Not pregnant. Now, not pregnant, your cervix is only 2 centimeters.
So it sounds like all of this came at you really fast. We were here for our 19-week scan. You know, now they're checking us. They're diagnosing us with incompetent cervix. Your mom is telling you all of this history you didn't know. They're sticking needles in you. So now you're home, you're on bed rest, and what's going on, what's going through your head?
So now I'm home, I'm on bed rest, everything is good. 3 days later, so I had my anatomy scan on when I was 19 weeks, 1 day. I had the cerclage placed that morning. I got released that same day. Let me see, 2, 3, 4. So 19 weeks, 4 days. That morning, I woke up to a gush, which it basically was fluid and my mucus plug. My mucus plug came out first. I went to the bathroom to pee and wipe myself. And then when I got up to stand up, I was leaking fluid. So I called my doctor immediately. I told my husband, baby, we got to go back to the hospital. Now this is 19 weeks, 4 days. We go to the hospital. They check me out. They check to see if the fluid is amniotic fluid, which it was. They said, okay, at this point, you're at increased risk for infection. We have to remove the stitch. And then would you like to, they gave me options. Would you like to terminate the pregnancy or would you like to go home and be on bed rest and see if you can, wait it out? And I said, no, I'm going to go on bed rest. You can take this stitch out, but I'm going back home on bed rest, right? All right. So that night, we went back home after they removed the cerclage. We went back home. I'm on bed rest. My husband goes to his meeting. He comes back home. And I'm like, well, babe, I got to go to the bathroom. Come to the bathroom with me because I don't want anything to happen to me, you know, because they removed the stitch. And after they removed the stitch, they told me I was 1 centimeter dilated, which basically like, I guess a pinky, you can feel like with your pinky or whatever to go in your cervix. It's like a little bit open. So I go to the bathroom. I take a bowel movement and I don't push or anything because I'm scared. And I pee. I wipe myself, and all of a sudden, I start to feel something sliding out of me. And I'm like, baby, 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 come look, come look. What is it? Like, because I'm scared to look down. I didn't want it. I just was scared to look down. He looked, he said, something looked, I don't know what that is. And I looked down and it was the sac. It was basically the sac was out, just sac and water. So the baby was still up there, just sac and water coming out. I immediately called my doctor's office and we called the ambulance. And within literally like 3 minutes, there was 5 firefighters. I was still on the toilet. Immediately, probably after 3 minutes after the call, I had 5 to 6 firefighters standing over me while I'm on the toilet asking me all types of questions and bringing in the gurneys so I can get on it. And the doctor told me not to do anything, to just be careful. Don't try to push it back in. Don't try to do anything, you know. Just get to the hospital. Ambulance drives me to the hospital. I get out. They roll me in. They're checking me and things like that. And that's when they got us in a room and they told us, look, your sac is literally out. You are at an extreme risk for infection. If you get an infection, it could cause problems later on, like in life, trying to get pregnant again. Like, and if you get an infection in your uterus, you have to take antibiotics to clean it out. And sometimes it doesn't always clean out when you need it to. So that, guess what? Next time you get pregnant, you still have an infection in your uterus. Now the infection is in the placenta and now you're going to lose the baby regardless. So you have to make sure that you don't catch an infection. So that's when they broke down the news to us. And at that point, we were supposed to have a gender reveal. My husband's birthday was the next week. And it was just a disaster. It was really tough time and hard to grasp. And we had the envelope that they gave us at the 19-week scan. And we opened the envelope together. And I knew by my husband's face, like, it was a boy because he just busted out, you know, crying. Like, I could just see it in his face. So we're sitting there crying together and just trying to get through with each other. And through the process, we were talking to our pastor and he was just praying for us and just telling us to look on the bright side. Like, the main thing that he was telling, like, my husband is, make sure Mo is okay. Like, make sure she is good, because that's all you need right now. Like, if we can't save the pregnancy, save Mo. Like, you got to do what you got to do so that, you know, Morgan is still alive and Morgan is good, you know? So we ended up having to go, and they gave me medicine to thin out my cervix so that I can deliver. And that all happened at nighttime. And the doctor ended up coming out and looking, and it basically, I had him looking, and he's like, baby, it's the baby's leg. Like, the doctor just told me, hey, just give me one big push. And I just pushed and everything came out, and our baby was still in his sack. Like, and they cut it open, cut the umbilical cord, weighed him, and, you know, did everything, measured his feet, got a footprints, and wrapped them up, and they gave them back to us. And we just sat there and cried and prayed and looked at his features and held his hand, kissed his little toes and everything. And that was that loss. So that was the first stillbirth, because he was born alive. And I'm not sure how long. We didn't really pay attention to his breathing or anything like that, because we know that they breathe for a little bit afterwards until their heart stops beating. But that was that loss.
I just want to say thank you for sharing that with us. Yes. And also, I'm so sorry that that happened to you and your family.
Thank you. No worries. I mean, I know my story can help other women, and that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, is to help other women to be, you know, let them know they're not alone and they can, you know, get through this, and it happens, and it's not uncommon, and it's actually common, and you just don't normally hear about it, because a lot of people don't like to, you know, share their pregnancy loss and miscarriage, and miscarriage is super, super common, and people don't like to talk about it, but I mean, it's okay.
Can we take a moment to kind of like unpack how that like affected you and
your husband,
your family, your marriage?
Did you guys bury your son?
No, we cremated.
Okay.
Yeah, I have urns, these heart-shaped urns that our boy's ashes fit perfectly inside of them, and I take them with me when I go wherever I am. I take them with me. Like, we live in two different places, so I take them when we leave for good to go to Cali. I'm there with me when we leave to come back for good in Dallas. There with me then. But we chose cremation. I just think that is based on our lifestyle. Cremating was much simpler, because they can always be with us, versus burying them in California. We don't even live there, never would probably ever go back after we leave California. You know what I'm saying?
And after this loss, what did you and your husband, how did it impact your family? What did you guys do to grieve and to heal?
We definitely did a lot of praying, and we did some traveling together with just me and him, and just spending time as a couple and loving each other. I mean, you cry a lot. Like, I did start my blog, Incompetent But Hopeful, which that kind of helped me, you know, tell my story and actually write it out. And I felt better after writing. So I guess that was one way that I coped with, you know, my loss. And my husband, he was just trying to accommodate me as much as possible and make me as happy as much as possible. Another person honestly does not know what to do, especially in that type of situation. Like, I got a lot of people saying, I'm sorry, I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say, you know? Like, they can't imagine. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's fine. Like, I get it. You know, I get it. I understand. But I mean, we just are really big on our faith, and I know that God is going to bless us, so I'm not going to give up. But it definitely did affect, like, our family members and things like that, friends and families, the people that's close to us. It really had a big impact among everybody.
Did it spark any, like, obviously, when you were going through the process of getting the cerclage, that opened up the conversation where your mom was like, I had miscarried also. Did you guys, did it, like, spark deeper conversation between you, or... was she able to kind of like lend more support in the process, having gone through that and also like being your mom?
Yeah, she definitely told me the stories after the fact. And we definitely talked about it. And I'm like, well, dang, I didn't even know. And she was like, yeah. And I also did my research after my loss, and I joined a group called Abby Loopers on Facebook, and they also have an Abby Loopers website. But it's basically created by a woman who also had incompetent cervix and had losses prior to getting her TAC, which is a transabdominal cerclage. So a TAC, whenever I say TAC, that means transabdominal cerclage, which is a cerclage that's actually placed through the abdomen. So versus going through you vaginally and sewing the bottom of your cervix, you're actually going through your stomach and sewing at the top of your cervix, because you have internal and external cervix. So internally is through your abdomen, and externally is the preventative cerclage, where they sew external your cervix. That's if you've ever had a pap smear and they clamp your cervix with that, you know, the clamp, they clamp your cervix. So that's the part that they sew externally. So that is also inside of you before it reaches to your uterus. That way you get pregnant, you have to have a C-section to deliver. Like, your cervix is not supposed to open. And I did tons of research, and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to get a transabdominal cerclage. Now, at this point, I spoke to the number one doctor in the world, which that's who everybody refers you to go to, because a lot of the women that's on Abby Loopers have gone and got a Haney TAC. We call it the Haney TAC, because his name is Dr. Haney. He's based out of Chicago. And I had a phone consult with him, and I spoke to him, and he told me straight up, I deal with people with your insurance all the time, and Cigna is pretty old school, and they do not cover, you know, getting a transabdominal cerclage unless you've lost maybe about 2 to 3 pregnancies with a preventative cerclage. So they want you to have about 2 to 3 losses with the preventative cerclage, which is placed at 13 weeks. They want you to have two. Yes, they want you to have 2 losses like that. It's absolutely insane. And he always explains how Cigna is old school in their approach. They also want you, if they do cover it, they want you to be pregnant while you get the procedure. Really?
That sounds risky.
Like,
that
they want you to be
sound...
pregnant before. Exactly. It's like, why would you want to undergo this type of procedure while you're pregnant? For one, you can't use medication like narcotics when after the procedure because you're pregnant. So you're going to be in a lot of pain. And the way that he places them, he does not do a local anesthetic. Like, he puts you to sleep, cuts you open, place it, and you're woke. You're awake. Like, instantly. So, and then they give you your pain meds after that, but they don't do a local anesthetic to numb the site and then cut you. It's like, no.
Can I interject here? And let's just take it aback, because we left you where you and your husband were traveling and kind of strengthening your marriage and your family through intimacy and time together. When did you guys decide you were ready to start conceiving again?
I was ready immediately, but you have to, if you want the transabdominal cerclage, you have to wait 90 days after your loss. So basically 3 months after your loss, you can get your transabdominal cerclage, and then after that you can start trying again. Like, so in my head, I'm like, well, let's get this party started because I want to get my, you know, cerclage, my transabdominal cerclage.
So during that 3 months you guys were traveling, you did your research, you were part of this Facebook group, and you spoke with Dr. Haney, and he told you all the bullshit that Cigna was trying to put y'all through.
Yeah, just trying to take our minds off of everything, and spoke to Dr. Haney. Also spoke to another doctor that was in Dallas, that was locally, because I, you know, on the AbbeyLooper site, you know, women post, or they have like a list of doctors who places tags in different cities. And I chose to go with this doctor out in Dallas. And he's delivered, I mean, he's had placed tags many women, never had a loss either. He even had like a woman with triplets deliver at 33 weeks, which made it to 33 weeks with triplets. I'm like, okay, then, you know, he's good. Like, I can use him, you know. So my insurance ended up covering it. So I go to them. And meanwhile, this is all because of insurance. This is why I'm going to him, because my insurance won't cover it. Otherwise, I'm paying $7,000 off the top just to pay for my procedure if I go to Dr. Haney. So I get my lap tack done. Boom, boom. Everything's good to go. I go back to my fertility clinic and I'm doing IUIs. We get pregnant again. This time around, I'm super confident because guess what? I have this lap tack. I'm good to go. My doctor had triplets with his tack. Like, I'm all good. First trimester, scary. I'm hiding my pregnancy. I don't want anybody to know. This whole pregnancy, this go around, I was scared. I was scared of the worst thing happening ever in my life, which was to lose another pregnancy again because of my cervix. And so we get through the first trimester, boom, everything is good. I go to my, I'm now seeing a maternal fetal medicine doctor, which is a high risk doctor. I'm having cervical checks every 2 weeks. I'm on progesterone. We found out that we were pregnant with twins this go round, and we were super excited. They were dye twins, which basically they had their own sac, own placenta, which was good, fraternal, basically. And they brought up selective reduction, which they is just standard for them to ask you if you want to basically terminate one of the babies so that I'll have a better chance given my circumstances with my cervix. And I have this transabdominal cerclage now. And they asked me if I wanted to terminate one. And I said, hell no. If they both not going to be here, I mean, like, if they both can't go, then they both will not make it. Mm-hmm, like,
because what I'm a choice not about to make. To,
you know,
that is
right. Just, like, and I was literally, I was 12 weeks when they asked me, and I'm like, hell no, like, no. So we go on. He just asked, just because it's just protocol to just ask, given my circumstances, and he was okay with it. And he also said, okay, so this is what we're going to start doing. We're going to give you, 2 week checks, bi-weekly checks of your cervix, just to, you know, ease your anxiety. So at my 18 week scan, my husband was with me, and then they get to my cervix again. Here we go again. They look at my cervix. They see where my transabdominal cerclage is, but they also see a tiny bit of fluid dipped below the band. Meaning that my cervix is trying to open up and a little bit of the sac is now going through a little bit. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, what the heck? So I go online again. I'm looking up all this stuff. I'm looking up how other people's pregnancies ended up like this and who are in the same situation as me. And I seen good results, but it was very few people who had this situation happen. So they don't see any improvements for twins with, they don't have any studies for twins with a cerclage. So they're just like, well, we can do a pessary. Just think about it. A pessary just goes around your cervix. It's like a donut that goes around your cervix to keep the bottom of it closed. So you know what? I went home the next day. I called back. I said, hey, I want to get that pessary. I think that's going to be the best option for me. So I ended up using a pessary, and I got to 18 weeks, and I started to get cramping. I ended up admitting myself to the hospital. I get to the emergency room. The people in an emergency room do not know anything about a transabdominal cerclage. So if you're listening to this and you have a transabdominal cerclage, I suggest you go straight up to labor and delivery if your doctors are familiar with, you know, with your record and stuff. So that's what I had to do after this happened. They had me in the emergency room for about 2 hours laboring, basically, through my tech. And you're not supposed to be in labor with the tech because you can rupture. Like, your uterus can rupture, like, it's just not good to labor through it. So anytime you're having contractions and it's lasting for too long, you should always go in. So I went into the hospital and they gave me ibuprofen. They watched me. I stayed over in the hospital for 4 days. They monitored me on ibuprofen. And after my 3 days of ibuprofen, the final day, they just watched me and just made sure I wasn't, you know, still contracting or having any Braxton Hicks. And they sent me home after that, back on bed rest, and everything was okay. Nothing had changed with my cervix or anything, so everything was all right. So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, okay, good. Whew. Next week rolls around, and maybe had been probably about 3 days after I left the hospital. My husband had to leave out of town to go to work. They were playing in Jacksonville, Florida. His grandmother was staying with us so that I can have somebody there if I needed help because I was on bed rest. And I woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning in excruciating pain, cramping. So I knew something was wrong. I told his grandma, and she drove me to the hospital. I went straight up to L&D. I was laboring so hard and having so huge contractions that baby A sac ruptured. After one sac ruptured, all of the contractions stopped. So just imagine my cervix trying to dilate with this tech that's not fully tight, like how it's supposed to be. Now, this is not supposed to happen with a tech. You're not supposed to even have your sac dip through it a little bit. So this would cause everything, that my tech was not placed correctly, in other words, and it caused me to go into preterm labor with my tech, and it caused my sac to rupture with baby A. So, after my sac ruptured, nothing was happening. I felt so much better. It was like a relief. It was like all of the pressure was gone. So the doctors came in and they basically explained everything to me. And my doctor came in and she was like, all right, Morgan, I'm so sorry you had to go through this again. And you know what's going to have to happen now because you're only 19 weeks. And I was like, yes, I know, but can we wait on my husband because I can't do this alone, you know? And she was like, absolutely. When is he getting in? Now, I called him. This was 3 a.m. in the morning when I had got up. I called him as soon as I got to the hospital. And it was 3, 4, 5, 6 a.m. his time. He literally had to hop on a flight, which had a freaking connection because there wasn't a straight flight to us. And he had to fly into San Francisco and drive all the way down to the hospital, which was about an hour away from the San Francisco airport. And we waited on him. My procedure was going to start at 7. So he ended up making it in time and just being there to comfort me and everything. The plan was to remove the stitch and deliver vaginally, but do a delayed delivery with baby B, since baby B still had his sac intact. We're going to deliver baby A, but hold off baby B using magnesium drip. Like a magnesium, it's like it stops contractions and stops labor. It's a harsh medication too. But that's what we were going to do. I wake up from my surgery, loopy, and all I can hear is my doctor saying, "Morgan, unfortunately, while we were putting the probe into your stomach, we accidentally poked your uterus and baby B sac." So this is when I was pissed, but I went back to sleep and I woke up again after waking up from the anesthesia, and the doctor came in again and explained everything to me. So I'm like, well, what's my options? Can I not just sit here and, you know, let everything happen on its own? Like, why do I have to terminate my pregnancy? And she basically was just, the whole infection protocol is more prone for infection. Plus, at this point, baby A hadn't had water for about a day, and that just wasn't going to be good anyway. She was like, well, he's not going to survive. She was like, just let me know when you are ready. And I wasn't ready, so I waited. And my husband was just like, babe, when are you going to be ready? I hate to see you going through this, you know, like, I just want you to come out, you know, healthy on the other end. Like, basically, we both was tired of going through, you know, being in the hospital for almost 2 weeks and in and out of the hospital and all of this. And I just was like, okay. And it ended up being the next day. And I was 19 weeks, 4 days this time, 19 weeks, 4 days. And I ended up, they gave me the pills again. And I ended up delivering both the twins that day, the next day. But it was very hard on me. The first loss with our son, it was hard, really hard. The second time, I was pissed. I was so mad. I was so angry at my doctor that he did not place my transabdominal cerclage. I'm pissed at my insurance company for not trying to, you know, pay for this procedure for somebody who needs it, because you need it. Right. Like,
that's just it's
you know, like, some people can have the preventative cerclage and make it through. I'm not one of those people, because I had my losses at 19 weeks. Most of those people who have had their loss and had the preventative cerclage, they made it to like 23 weeks without the emergency cerclage, you know, or they made it to 21 weeks. I'm like, okay, if you can make it to 21 weeks and you have a preventative cerclage the next time, in my head, I'm like, you should be good to go. You should be good enough to make it to about 28 weeks. Me, preventative cerclage, I wouldn't have made it with twins, for one. With a singleton, I probably would have made it to about 21 weeks before all of this would have probably started happening all over again. But yeah, that's how that ended up going. And I ended up having, they had to actually cut me open on my stomach. So I have an ugly scar on my stomach now. They cut me open vertically on a above my belly button, a little bit, like maybe 2 inches above my belly button. And that's where they had to sew my uterus back together. It's like the size of a fingernail. The puncture is like a size of a fingernail. And my doctor told me, after all that you've been through, because she's been there for both of my losses, and she was just like, I highly recommend you going through surrogacy. I cannot see you go through this again. At least go through surrogacy, let your uterus and your body heal for a year, and then you can try again. But I don't want you to try too soon, because I want your uterus to heal where that incision is. So
when did this loss occur?
2018, November 2018. My first loss was November 2017. So both tragic losses in the month of November, which is also my husband's birthday. And actually, everything with the twins started on my husband's birthday. We went out to dinner, out to eat, and that's when I started to have the contractions. So two losses, both in November, 1 year apart from each other.
And now, are you following your doctor's recommendations? Are you guys waiting?
Sort of. So I actually called after my loss this past November 2018 with the twins. I called Dr. Haney back. I explained him everything that happened. He was devastated and sorry that had happened to me. I sent over my records, and he got a look at what happened with my procedure with the laparoscopy with the twins at the hospital. He got a record of the doctor when he placed my transabdominal, my lap tack, and he looked at everything, and he said, I told him what my doctor said about surrogacy, and he said, you don't need to go through surrogacy. You just need to have your transabdominal cerclage placed the right way. Like, all I'm seeing is fail, because, and he was like, I deal with this all the time. I always have to replace people's transabdominal cerclages who had a doctor place it inappropriately, like a doctor who didn't place it right. He's had several people who he had to redo their cerclage, and after he placed it, they had a successful pregnancy. And he just saw, there's nothing wrong with you as far as conceiving and carrying. You can carry your children. You don't need a surrogacy. You don't need a surrogate. You don't need to spend all your money for a surrogate. And you don't have to wait a whole year before you start trying again. So I paid out of pocket $7,000. I paid another grand to stay in a hotel that was attached to the medical facility, and another grand for me and my husband's flight out there. So about 10 grand to get out there and have this procedure done so that I can come home with the baby.
When was your procedure?
March 13th of 2019. So I recently had my procedure done in March. And I am fully recovered. The recovery was, the recovery was really bad for the first 3 days. But by day 4 through 7, I felt a lot better. And week 2, week 3, I was way back to normal. I was walking and everything really fine. I was good.
Whew, that was quite a journey.
A lot. Yes, yes, yes. We have been through it.
Through the ringer, yeah.
I can't even fathom. And I have to, again, thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm so moved by your resiliency. I'm so moved by your faith. And I really hope that you and your husband get your rainbow baby.
Thank you so much. Yes, we're praying for our rainbow baby.
And for those that don't know, can you explain what a rainbow baby is?
Okay, so a rainbow baby is your baby that you have after recurrent miscarriage or a stillbirth. That's basically a rainbow baby. It's the rainbow after the storm. So we're praying for many rainbow babies after this.
Definitely, yes.
So what's the goal? How many babies are running around?
Are we getting a whole football team?
Yeah, how many future track runners / football players are we pushing out? Yeah.
Right. Initially, I wanted 5 kids, but given my circumstances of what I am dealing with my cervix, I am thinking 3 to 4.
Okay.
Because I can have up to, with the transabdominal cerclage, I can have up to about 5 C-sections. But that's only if doctor is like, okay, you're good to go for the next one. If doctor is like, after the third one, he's like, I don't advise any more pregnancies. Like, your uterus is looking a little, you know, thin. Then I wouldn't, obviously. But I want to have about 3 to 4.
Yeah, I was expecting like a 2. And Morgan said, no.
She was like, just one less.
One less.
Yeah.
They're not deterring this over here. We got this. Just one.
Oh, shoot. I'm like, if I got to go through IVF to get twins so I only get pregnant twice, then I will do it. Let's go.
2 track stars, 2 quarterbacks.
We're ready.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
So the last question, because I also saw that you and your husband have a YouTube channel. And y'all are so cute. One, both of you are like
the most
beautiful people I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you look great. Seriously. As a couple.
This whole entire time I'm just stalking both of your Instagrams.
What made you start your YouTube channel, given that you already had your blog?
I mean, I started my blog, Incompetent But Hopeful, I think it was like December of 2017. Now, we started our vlog, our YouTube channel, May of 2018. I love vlogging. It actually brings us closer together, even though we be arguing. Me and my husband be arguing over the vlog. Like, he's like, I need to record because you do not record right. And I'm like, well, I'm going to edit because you record too much. Like, so we be having like these little petty arguments and we just be dying, laughing, talking about, you know, we call in Georgia, we say Joan. I don't know if y'all say that on a, like, you making fun of, or like in Texas, my husband, they say score. Like, y'all, you scorn.
Here we say roast.
Yeah, like, roast. That's in New York.
Yeah,
New York say is roast. A roast.
Y'all say roast. What?
Like how you would roast a chicken?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Flame. So, yeah, you roasting. Yeah, you, oh, so you roasting? Yeah, we used to say that a little bit too. But yeah, we be roasting on each other, like, you know, talking about each other.
We actually say cutting ass. And, that's what we say.
It depends on the generation you're born in. Yeah. It changes.
But y'all be cutting each other's ass. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely brings us closer together when we get to work together on something like filming and just basically being ourselves. We love being ourselves. We're really genuine people. We down to earth. Like, we not stuck up at all. Like, I mean, you may catch my husband on a bad day. Like, this one guy in the airport yelled his name, like, Marquis going. And he was just like, oh, my goodness. Like, he was trying to keep his head down so nobody else noticed him, so they wouldn't bother him. And he was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I was so loud, but I'm just so crunk. And he was just like, oh, yeah, it's no big deal. Like,
yeah, just a regular person just trying to catch a flight.
Which is understandable. Trying to get through TSA, you at the airport. You know, you're just trying to get in and out. You're not trying to have no one see you, not a horde of people.
Right.
And everyone deserves, you know, to be able to do normal
and that's,
stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what our vlog, we want to let people know. Like, we are normal people. Like, yes, he's in the NFL, but we have family. We deal with family issues. We deal with life issues. We have the same stresses that other people have. It just might be different just because financially we're not like in a chokehold financially, but still being financially stable brings up other stresses, you know, with other people trying to, you know, asking for money, asking for handouts and this and that. So yeah, we deal with the same, we got the same, we might not have the same stuff, but we deal with stuff too. And we are human. We're not robots. Like, But yeah, so we try to bring that out. And yeah, some people, some fans want to see football stuff on the channel, but it's like, this is not what this channel is for. This is like background lifestyle, like get the behind the scenes. Like you can see football. You can go Google. Yeah, you can. Like you can Google plays.
Right. Fox, NBC.
You can Google plays. ESPN, you can go. Yeah, they got you. Exactly.
And I was amazed at how open you guys are, given your husband's profession. Does the NFL ever try to censor you guys?
No. I mean, this is freedom of speech. Like, if anything, the team is very, our team, 49ers, maybe that might not fly on other people's team, but the 49ers are very, very family oriented. They are very supportive in everything. Like, very supportive. They even ask us to come speak sometimes to different dinners and things that they have, like organizational events that they have. And it's just an honor to be able to, you know, share our story and motivate other people. Or sometimes it takes a story to get somebody to, you know, to do the right thing or to go down the right path or to not give up or to not commit suicide or to not leave their wife. Like, it's just so many things that just could spiral out of just sharing our story.
And one last question, and then we're going to let you go. We've had enough of your time. Darn it, I think I forgot the question.
I have a question. It's not related at all. I'm just like, oh, you guys went to South Africa and the Maldives. Where y'all going next?
OMG. You want to know?
I got to know.
See? Hold on. I need to ask my husband if he's trying to. Give me 1 second. I want to see if he want us to, because we've been telling people, but I don't know publicly, because we want our audience
to have the first.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So off record, I can tell y'all. Off record.
Ooh. I'm going to bleep it out. I'm going to bleep it out of the episode. And then everybody has to go find out. Yeah.
I remember my question now.
Okay.
Last you spoke, you said that the last I heard of your personal career, you said that you had tried out for the Olympics. What have you put on? Have you put your athletic career on hold as you pursue motherhood?
Yes, I actually did. I put everything on hold to start a family, and I'm still putting on everything on hold to start a family. It's just something that I just really want over, you know, making an Olympic team, over anything. Like, this is a life accomplishment that I really want. I really want to be a mother.
And you're going to make a great one.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you're going to make a great one. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And what I love about your story, what is so unique, is that when people think of fertility struggles, when they think of pregnancy loss, they think of older people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to hear that you're only 25, and most of this started at what, 22, 21.
Yes.
It's also something that's neglected.
I definitely agree. It happens at all stages in life and all ages.
Thank you again, Morgan.
Thank you, Morgan.
Thank you for inviting me.
Woo!
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That was a lot. That was heavy. But again, I'm so moved by the resilience. Like,
yeah. Can you tell the story that you just, I should have been recording that. Cause we were off mic. We were just talking about like, just the anger at the doctors and how
somebody
might've got choked up.
Not might've.
Well, I was doing that to cover my ass legally, but
it didn't happen. So it's not going to happen.
But if I don't know. But, if you ever attack a doctor, they're going to be like, on this episode, she said, might have.
I mean, I did it. Hell.
This evidence is admissible in court.
But yeah, like when she said, and it was, I'm assuming it's only because of the grogginess, and she said like they told her when she had just came out of anesthesia, that's neglectful. Don't do that. And I'm glad that they came back when she was kind of fresh to, you know, reiterate. But I would have been, that doctor wouldn't have been there. I would have been in the street flipping shit, like, yo, setting shit on fire. Like, I can't imagine the anger.
Yeah, I literally actually cannot imagine it.
Like, it just seems like something would have snapped. Like, because I was so hopeful. There's so many fears. There's so much emotion.
Yeah.
There is fear. There's anxiety. There is excitement. There is so much.
And then a lot of, like, labor that went into it, right?
Like,
yeah.
Such a journey, you know, to get here, and what seems to be, this should be it.
Exactly. It's a very bad analogy, but like after a long day, when you come home and you drop your keys.
No.
After all that shit, I'm finally about to get inside.
I talk myself through. Make it home. Exactly. It's going to be over. And then you drop your keys. Your coat gets caught on the doorknob and you're just like, fuck it. Like, because there's so much you can take before you break, you know, that her resiliency is just it's so admirable. I just cannot imagine.
So that led us to talking about, because I was thinking about what he was going through. And
what her husband was going through. Because
you think like men are also like, they be angry sometimes.
They have emotions. Exactly. They are emotionally invested in this too.
Yeah, especially if they're like trying to protect like the mother of their child.
You know,
right?
Their wife, someone that they care about, of course. And we had talked about a personal story, but then Morgan had appeared on the Sisters in Loss podcast, which is a podcast about pregnancy loss and infertility, and shares women's stories. And in that episode, she had they had talked about her and the host had talked about after their first loss in 2017, her husband had to go play. He had a game. He had to go. And it was like, you know, what was he doing? And it seemed like when she told the story, you know, he didn't want to go. He didn't want to leave her side. But she encouraged him, you know, to go. And during that game, he won like I don't know football terminology. I'm a Kua. But he's a wide receiver. And he made an 83-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure on those numbers, but I swear it was 83-yard touchdown. Either way, he made a very phenomenal touchdown.
Yeah, because the football field is 100 yards.
You know, that's a lot of running, my nigga.
He ran the whole thing.
The whole field.
Over 75% of the field, he was just...
He was out.
Yeah.
You know, and in the end zone, he kind of broke down and he cried. You know, he commemorated the son that they had just lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was my answer to Sam's how was he functioning? Because I can't, you know, I can't imagine. I can't.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, I would call the coach like, nigga, you're not going to see me today. You're not. Run for who? Catch what?
Yeah.
Not today.
Catch these hands.
It was the same night. Like, no, it's y'all not going to see me today. And you should understand.
Resilient family that I've
come
across in my entire life.
I can't imagine how they just keep it up. They just,
I don't know.
Nope, we gotta go. Nope. And that's nothing but faith and knowing that,
yeah,
you know, what is gonna be yours is gonna be yours.
Yeah.
At the end of it, you know.
Right.
And that's admirable. I just can't. Whew.
They're pretty dope. To say the least.
To say the least. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Y'all go see them. And they're dope as fuck.
Yeah, and I'm just going to watch all their travel videos because that's what I do in my spare time anyway. So, I love watching Black travel videos.
I realized that we didn't give Morgan a chance to drop her handles.
Oh.
Where people can find her and her husband. So we're going to do it for her.
That's how heavy that episode was.
Yeah, we were just like, we got to let you go.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I was like, I gotta go.
Like, I can't.
I'm not okay.
Yeah, I let you. We can't take up more of your time, you know, ripping the bandages off of your trauma.
Exactly.
Go hug your husband and, you know, enjoy your weekend. But we'll do that as we do ours. So yes. If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can go to InahoUprising.com to pay a hoe and check out merch. You guys can follow Morgan on Instagram at Morgan, a.k.a. Momo. That is Morgan, a.k.a. M-O-M-O. You can
go on their YouTube channel at youtube.com/C/GoodwinSZN, like Goodwin Season. And that will be in the link for the description of this episode.
You can find her on her blog, which will also have her social medias linked, which is Incompetent But Hopeful.
Yes.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram and Facebook.
And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram.
Ooh, I'm sorry, that's a lot.
Yeah, I was like Facebook, but I never. Yeah, I didn't think about it.
You can find me at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram and Twitter.
Facebook. What's that? No, I'm just kidding. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at SlamRid and at Carmen San Diego for travel and food photos on Instagram.
Bye.
Bye.